This is the Austin Road Show podcast. The Road's Rewind.
He's the busiest man in politics today in Georgia. He's all over the place. Attorney General Chris Carr, who is happy to tell you he is not running for office right now.
Austin, good to be with you.
Yeah, you're running the road. You're not running for
office.
That's right.
That's exactly
so,
right.
So, busy day for you today. You were out at the Cadet Training Center, the Law Enforcement Cadet Training Center in Appling, and then you were down at Georgia Cyber Center a little while ago. It's pretty impressive what we've got going on around here, isn't it?
It's unbelievable. And I was fortunate enough to be here in 2016 when we did the groundbreaking, but that was when I was Commissioner of Economic Development. So I hadn't been here since I became AG, and it is absolutely phenomenal what's going on at that cyber center.
Is it an overstatement to say that outside of the merger of Augusta University and the Medical College of Georgia, this is one of the most significant economic engines for the entire state of Georgia, if not even the entire southeastern United States. What's going on with the military mission here and the Georgia Cyber Center?
Undoubtedly. And I was asking one of the gentlemen there, I said, is there anything like this where you get the private sector, you get the military, you get state, you get academia? He said, there's nothing else in the country like it. And I mean, if you look at it, as far as the eye can see, we're doing more online. And to know that Georgia is at the forefront of cybersecurity and fintech and mobility and health IT, Augusta, Georgia is right in the middle of it, particularly from a cyber perspective. To be able to have that federal piece, that state piece, bringing in the private sector, I think is unbelievable.
I have got to ask you, because it is my overriding public concern for the state of Georgia, and I really am, I'm gotten frustrated to the point of being angry about it a little bit. I know it's not your fault because you're not a pocketbook guy. You're someone who requests the pocketbook open up. We have got to do something in this state about getting our crime labs up and running the way that they're supposed to. There's absolutely no reason for a grieving family to have to wait on autopsy or lab reports weeks and months. I've had it happen in my family twice where there was a death that was not exactly determined by the medical examination at the time. Blood tests were sent to the crime lab, and as a result, 3 months in one case, 4 months in another. Thank God in heaven, the people I was related to didn't have to wait for insurance benefits or things like that, but I was contacted by a lady whose husband died under very unusual circumstances. They couldn't figure out what had done it, and while suicide was not off the table, there was a $100,000 policy that was not going to pay off until it was deemed not a suicide, And it took 6 months for those tests to come back. And she lost her house.
Well,
and I mean, Mr. Attorney General, I'm going to call you that because this is so serious. This is the one problem that I've ever known in government that can be solved with money. It's a matter of hiring the technicians and putting them in place. And I don't care whether we have a day where there's a technician who says, man, I just finished 5 tests. I don't have anything left to do. I'm going to sit here and play Angry Birds for 30 minutes until the next test comes in. Fine. That should happen before one family has to wait days, weeks, or months for a crime report to come back. And what's it going to take to fix this?
Well, I hate to hear the story. And the only thing I can say is, knowing that the crime lab had closed years ago, I know that there is a great new GBI director in Vic Reynolds. And I know that the folks that you elect to go to Atlanta, like Barry Fleming, have this front and center on their mind, and they're talking about it. To your point, we are the lawyers for the GBI. We don't make decisions and that sort of thing. I'm not as versed in what happened in the past.
You're law enforcement's biggest cheerleader, though, in an elected position, and that's the reason I wanted to try and get you on board with this.
And I appreciate you bringing it up.
I've had in-depth conversation literally for years with Vernon Collins, our coroner in Columbia County. The Columbia County morgue is named after my cousin, Tommy King, who was the coroner here before him. He used to complain about this. Certainly Mark Bowen in Richmond County is on board with it as well. And it's one of the most frustrating things. We can't cure cancer. We can't cure COVID. You can throw $10 billion at COVID. It's not going to cure it. This is a problem that can be cured with a relatively reasonable amount of money. And everybody always says, well, where's it going to come from? I put a $10 surcharge on every traffic ticket in this state from now until eternity. Nobody will gripe about it. If you don't want to pay the fine, don't speed. You know, nobody ever complains about law enforcement money, particularly when it's made from the criminals who break the code, the criminal code. And I can't imagine what more it's going to take. And by the way, I guess, you know, give credit where credit is due. This is not a Georgia problem. This is a 50-state problem. Mm-hmm. Every single state in the union has crime lab delays that are based on human deficiencies, as in not enough people in seats, not enough scientists in chairs, not enough technicians doing the job.
Well, and I appreciate you bringing it up, and I will take it back to Atlanta and talk with folks at the GBI as well and see.
Mark and Vernon have told me that if we could ever get a crime lab that was running efficiently, that they know people in South Carolina, Alabama, Tennessee, and Florida that would pay us to run their exams for them so they didn't have to wait. When I had a cousin that passed away a few years ago, her mother was told it was going to be months, and we didn't know whether there was some unusual illness in the family that was going to kill other people or what. And she said, okay, I understand that there's a way. Tell me what amount of money I can pay to have that test done privately just so we know. And they said, there's no such thing. And she said, it doesn't matter. I'll write the check right now. Tell me what I have to pay. And they said, no, it can't be done. It's not legal. It blew my mind.
I appreciate you bringing it up. Yeah. I really do.
Well, again, it's something that I would love to be able to fix as a problem. Sure. We can stamp fixed and then move on.
Sure.
I got to ask you about these incredible questions that the Supreme Court Justice nominee is getting. And I, for the life of me, I don't understand. The line of questioning is going on right now. They're giving her lessons on Obamacare. They're giving her lessons on Roe v. Wade. This is akin, I use this in my morning commentary, this is akin to interviewing an umpire in Major League Baseball. And when he sits down in front of you, say, okay, I want you to tell me what you think of the designated hitter rule. That's not his job. He's there to call strikes and balls. He's there to call you out or safe at first base. Policy is not his topic. And it's the same thing with the Supreme Court judge. Where do these people get off with this line of questioning? She gives the same answer every time. It's relentless.
Well, I think that it's credit to her because she's answering the question the way that a Supreme Court justice is supposed to. She cannot prejudge. She can't prejudge. Her job, whatever case may come her way, is to read the text of the law and to determine the original intent of the Constitution.
It's either a ball or a strike. It doesn't matter what his intent was when he threw it.
And the game hasn't started.
Yeah.
The game starts when she goes on the bench. So to continue that, I think she's done an outstanding job. I think she's an unbelievable candidate. I think she'll do a great job. I mean, she's well-respected across the board.
And by the way, you got to give a little bit of credit. If Kavanaugh had been this nominee and she had gone in last time, it wouldn't have gone through. The president knew what he was doing. If he wanted to get the safest, most admirable candidate through quickly, he held this lady in his pocket. I mean, she's been on the list since day one. He held her in his pocket until he knew, okay, we got a limited window of opportunity. Here's where we put her in because nobody can touch her.
Well, and what an unbelievable list that he's had to choose from, quite frankly.
Yeah.
And just watching her, and I haven't been able to see a lot of it, but what I have, the fact she sits there and she has a pad. She has no notes. And she's done all of this, off the top of her head. She's incredible.
You went to law school, of course. I can only imagine how many cases and how many noteworthy and landmark decisions you have to have in your mental Rolodex. But what's crazy about her is she's sitting in front of 100 million people on TV. The most pressure-filled moment in anyone's life is doing what she's doing. And she's able not – I mean, she didn't study for this. This is her life. She recalls all this information. It's almost like watching I have a very dear friend. He's our sports director here, Ashley Brown, who is just lifelong sports nut. And it's like watching him talk about sports. He didn't have to study it because this is his life. He knows it. He can tell you who had X number of home runs in 1972 because that's what his passion. And the law is her passion. It's an amazing thing.
Well, and just, again, look at her background. If you haven't been a clerk for Scalia, haven't been a professor, haven't been now on the bench where you can see her actually in action in a game, I think it's unbelievable to see what she's done, and she'll do a great job. And again, not only does she have to know all these cases, she knows if she gets it wrong, it's going to be all over Twitter. She's going to be criticized by those on the other side of the aisle. And again, this process is being done the right way. It's different from Garland Merrick, where you had a president of one party and a Senate of another party. The history has now been shown repeatedly. But the president has a constitutional obligation to appoint. The Senate has a constitutional obligation to advise and consent. It can be done. I'll tell you, Austin, I'm a big history buff. Back in 1835, there was a Georgian named whose last name was Wayne. He was a congressman from Savannah. And Andrew Jackson appointed him to the Supreme Court. He was appointed, confirmed, and seated in 7 days.
Holy
1835.
Cow. Wow.
I love throwing out a little
He must have been in Washington when he got nominated. It would have taken him that long to get there.
He was a congressman.
Oh, so, no, that's right.
I think he basically just went across the street.
Wow. That's crazy.
But I love throwing out a little bit of Georgia history.
Is that who Wayne County is named for?
I think that's Mad Anthony Wayne from the Revolutionary War. But
look at you.
I tell you, I could be mistaken. One of your listeners may come back and say, no.
Did you go to UGA?
I did. Okay. I'm a double dog.
Good for you.
Double dog.
Remind everyone where you grew up.
Grew up north of Atlanta, Dunwoody, and then went to Georgia undergrad, where I was a business major, and then went to law school there and graduated in 99. I was there each and every year of the 1990s due to undergrad and law school, and I'm sure they'd give me the key to the city, Austin, but
see,
they didn't.
You got to see Hines Ward play in person.
I did. He was a highlight. No two ways about it. One of the best dogs of all time.
Good buddy of mine, too. Great Steeler. One of the greatest Steelers of all time.
Yeah, absolutely.
So a lot of folks have been obviously very, very concerned, and rightfully so, over what they view as an overriding crisis that has come to boil over the course of the last year or two involving police brutality, particularly toward minorities. I have always considered Georgia, and actually the entire Southeast, very fortunate. I'm not going to say we're immune to it, because God knows something bad will happen tomorrow. But it seems like the Northeast, the West, the Midwest, we have these horrific cases of police brutality, riots in the streets, these types of things, with very few exceptions. Georgia, South Carolina, North Carolina, Alabama, Tennessee, spared these types of things. The cops down here know better? I mean, I'm not being facetious, and granted, there are episodes that occur, like the sad situation down in Brunswick, but that didn't involve law enforcement officers. That involved civilians.
That's right. Well, and having been with the cadets today to see the training, obviously I think we do an outstanding job, and we've got a great public safety training center that does works with our law enforcement. I don't know that I can give you the specific answer other than a couple of anecdotes, but I do think what happened in Brunswick with Ahmaud Arbery, which we've been involved in, and there's still an investigation looking into the actions of the district attorneys, but the community came together. And the community has come together and said, look, something tragic has occurred, but we want to work constructively together on all sides. So the community has come together. They're working with law enforcement. They're working with the mayor, the Chamber of Commerce, and say, hey, look, justice needs to be done. And I think that's at the key, the core of all of this. Justice must be done. And I've said many, many times, Austin, it isn't just to put your knee on the throat of a fellow human being until he or she dies. But it's also not just to go out there and target a fellow human being because he or she wears a police uniform.
Oh, that's
it's not perfect. It's not just to presume that the young African-American kid jogging through the neighborhood is a criminal, and it is not just to presume that every police officer is a racist. You got to get back to the point of justice, and I think we've been fortunate in Georgia. Communities have come together even during tragic situations. And we've got a great police chief over in LaGrange, Georgia, that they had a tragic situation occur in the 1940s with a lynching. He brought the community together in 2017 once he learned about it. And there's constructive dialogue. There's a way to get people together to build trust. And I think we have done a much better job with it in Georgia.
While we have been, thank God in heaven, spared a lot of the controversy, certainly we've had some, the Atlanta situation involving Rayshard Brooks, that has kind of come under your responsibility a little bit, or at least your oversight, because of the GBI's taking the lead in the investigation of that case. While you're not necessarily in charge of the GBI, you do advise them.
That's where the lawyers for the GBI.
Right.
That's right.
And have you considered, given the volatile nature and the explosive atmosphere, going the extra yard and releasing the GBI investigation into the Rayshard Brooks shooting and not wait for the DA to do it. Obviously, the DA in Atlanta has been deposed by election, thank God in heaven. Paul Howard's on his way out, and he may be on his way to the penitentiary before all is said and done. A new DA is coming in. He made the decision to charge one of the officers involved. That is a completely and totally irresponsible move on his part, according to every professional cop I know, including the sheriff of Burke County who sat in this chair. I didn't interview Clay Whittle on the air about it, but he and I have spoken off the air, and he thought it was totally ridiculous for Paul Howard to do what he did. The GBI has completed their report. You handed it to the DA, or the GBI did, and no comment. Do you think it's time to break the rules the way that they did with the grand jury report in the Breonna Taylor case and release that information?
Because we've advised the GBI, it wouldn't be appropriate for me to get into the specifics other than to say I think the GBI has handled it appropriately.
But are there times when it's time to step back from the standard operating procedure and do something a little different?
There may be. There may well be, but I'm not going to.
And again, I wouldn't press you on the details of the case, but I'm curious as to what conversations take place between you guys at the top when we're dealing with a situation like this, again, which is obviously volatile. You got to handle it correctly. And what Paul Howard did, I think, has been universally condemned by virtually everyone. Perhaps with the exception of the mayor of Atlanta, and she may even have a different comment on it now, but every professional law enforcement officer I know has said that was improper, what Howard did.
Well, and remember as well, we have asked the GBI to investigate several different elements involving District Attorney Howard, so I don't want to get down that path.
And he's also under federal investigation, too, if I'm not mistaken. I know you can't comment on that, but the bottom line is he's being looked at very seriously. There are times, again, I believe, when it's time to go off the beaten path, so to speak, and this might be one of those occasions. Well, listen, I know that you got to get down the road here in a minute. I do have a couple more minutes with you. I want to ask you point blank, because this is a big, big question for a lot of people. Should Georgia play Georgia Tech at the end of the year?
Yes. The answer is yes. I wish we would. But the problem is we didn't have the votes.
Right.
Remember, it's Georgia, South Carolina, Florida. We had the ACC rivalry. We just didn't have the votes, I guess.
Exactly.
But yes, I think we should.
Using that as a springboard here, are you comfortable with the way that Georgia has handled itself so far as regulations go, as far as the legal implications of what's happened involving this pandemic?
I do. And I'll tell you, Governor Kemp, from the very beginning, has been concerned with issue 1A, which is the protection and safety of the people of this state. And 1B has been the concern over the economic impact that this crisis could have. He has been data-driven. He's worked based on the facts. And the fact he has protected both those. Because, Austin, at the end of the day, it can be tragic to get COVID. It can be tragic to lose your job or your business because of the economic crisis. And think about it. The last 6 months have been like 1918, the 1930s, and 1968, all rolled up into 6 months. You've had a global health pandemic, an economic crisis, and social justice issues. I think Governor Kemp has done an outstanding job. And when you look at it, it was always about flattening the curve, right? I mean, that's what we were all trying to do, is flatten the curve. He has based his information on our great DPH commissioner and others. There was no playbook for anybody at the beginning. Anybody who said that they ran for office knowing they'd be in the middle of a global health pandemic is not being honest. You do what you can based on the information you have. And I think he's done an outstanding job. And again, I think Georgia's economy is showing resilience because of the decisions we've made. Remember, we never shut down. There are still states.
Oh,
D.C. is still shut down.
I don't know how. I've got friends and family both in California and in New York, and that anyone is able to make a living for their family up there. And I'll take you a step further, introduce politics in this a little bit. I'm shocked that there is not a wholesale mutiny among the liberals that are in charge of the government up there. In other words, I think our governor would be under armed guard if he were Andrew Cuomo right now. There's no doubt that the citizens of Georgia would never stand for for what they're tolerating up there, not to mention Newsom in California.
Well, and I've been told 70% of all the restaurants in New York that are closed forever.
Yeah. And, well, there's some people saying that New York City will never come back. Broadway closed till next July, for God's sakes.
Well, there is a way to do it safely. There's a way to do it appropriately. There's a way to do it based on fact and data. And that's what we have done in this state. And I know there are folks on the other side who have said the opposite, but I'm proud of the job that the state's done. I'm proud that, again, priority 1A has been the protection of the people, the health of the state, and then 1B has been the protection of the economy.
All right. Any truth to the rumor that you're going to start an investigation into what happened in the bottom of the ninth last night?
We won.
We dodged the 2-0.
We start back up at 6:05. Let's beat the Dodgers.
What a shame. Arlington, Texas. I mean, what the hell happened there? Who's making up these rules that you're going to play the Dodgers and Atlanta in Houston? Why? I mean, that's – or not Houston, Arlington, excuse me. Why in the world? That is nuts. That those games ought to be played in Georgia and in L.A.
I agree.
You know, and if L.A. doesn't want it, that's fine. They can play in Georgia and Georgia.
We'd be happy. We'd be happy. Again, I think there's a way to do it safely.
Absolutely. No doubt about
it. Enjoy it.
Well, it's an honor to have you in. As always, our best to your wife again. His wife, Joan, was for many years a reporter at the Augusta Chronicle, and she was Johnny Isaacson's chief of staff. Is she working with Kelly Loeffler?
She is. Chief of staff to Senator Loeffler.
Absolutely. I didn't – okay.
And she's been chief to three U.S. senators, Zell Miller, Johnny Isaacson, Kelly Loeffler, both parties, both genders.
How about that? Wow.
First, she's very historic.
She sticks around longer than the senators do. Bless her heart. Okay. Well, listen, I know you got to get going. We appreciate you coming in. Many thanks. Chris Carr, Attorney General for the great state of Georgia. Good to see you, sir.
Thanks, Austin. Great to be with you.
All right.
Thanks for listening to the Rhodes Rewind of the Austin Rhodes Show. Listen to Austin weekdays from 3 till 6 on Augusta's News Talk and Information Station, WGAC, at 95.1 FM, 101.9 FM, and AM 580. Stream it live on WGAC.com or on the WGAC mobile app. Thanks for listening to the Rhodes Rewind of the Austin Rhodes Show.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.